This is the Eurosnob Podcast.
What's up, guys? If you've already listened to part A of episode 31, you already know how everything's broken down. You've already heard my little spiel. But for those that are just tuning into this part of the episode, this is the U.S. national team content. We have a whole nother part on Arsenal's recent form and transfer rumors. So if you're looking for that stuff, go check it out. But again, this one is going to have our U.S. soccer discussion. So I hope you enjoy it. And if you haven't, again, if you haven't checked out the first part with the Arsenal content, we really recommend you do it. And I hope you enjoy that as well.
So the U.S. I don't know really how I want to dive into this. Part of me wants to put it up with in the same category as missing the World Cup. That might sound extreme, but I think it's, for those of you that don't know, I'm talking about the Jonathan Gonzalez situation. To me, it is emblematic. It is a sign. It's a symptom of the bigger problem that U.S. soccer has. And it's that problem that I put up there with as being a big, as big an issue as us missing the World Cup. And that is recruitment of Hispanic dual national players. It is a problem that ties into our whole youth system, which we've gotten into before. We're not going to get into tonight. But I want to get your thoughts on this Jonathan Gonzalez situation. Where do you, Alex, where do you come out on all that?
Yeah, it's been a hot button issue for U.S. soccer fans for the past couple days. But honestly, this has kind of been in the works for a few months, and it's frustrating, you know, from a playing perspective, because Jonathan Gonzalez was someone who came through the U.S. ranks. He played for U.S. youth national teams all throughout his career up until recently. And then this past year, he's broken through at Monterrey, become an absolute mainstay in their midfield. And midfield is not a position where the U.S. is deep at all. I mean, yes, you point to a Weston McKennie or a Tyler Adams, you know, those types of players. That's two players. You need more than that to build a midfield, because you don't know how those guys are going to pan out. You don't know if Tyler Adams is really the real deal. I mean, he's doing it in MLS, but, you know, a lot of players can do that. And Weston McKennie has shown flashes at Schalke, but he's also shown, you know, that he's not quite ready to be a mainstay. With Jonathan Gonzalez, you have a guy playing in a good league, or, you know, certainly a better league than MLS, playing regularly for a very good team, and he came through your system. So there's no, on the surface, you're thinking, well, this is a no-brainer. He, you know, he's played for us this whole time. It'll just happen. But the problem is, U.S. soccer completely fucked this one up, and there's no other way to spin that. From all accounts, the Mexican Federation, the Mexican national team coach, were constantly reaching out to Gonzalez and letting him know, hey, we're still interested. Hey, we're still interested. You know, we want you to play for us. Whereas from my understanding, you know, based on what I've read, it wasn't the U.S. national team coach. Obviously, we didn't have one in place for a little while, but Bruce Arena was not reaching out to Jonathan Gonzalez, and he was never called in for World Cup qualifiers, and it's not like we couldn't have used him, you know, given the midfield we put out there.
Dax McCarty is going to be much more effective.
Yeah, exactly. We need that. We need that CONCACAF experience. Well, someone tell me how that worked out. You know,
not
so
well.
Yeah, spoiler alert. Didn't end well. So, you know, then you know, Arena gets fired, and Sarachan he didn't call in Gonzalez for the Portugal friendly. Now, I know that Monterrey, there's like rumors that Monterrey weren't going to release him, but at the very least, you give him a call. You know, you at least let him know, hey, I know you can't come in, but we're still really interested. We want to have you. have people in the program reach out. It's really quite simple. Make the guy feel valued, because, you know, I look at it like college football recruiting, for just kind of as a parallel. You know, high school recruits feel ties to tons of different programs. It's up to you as a recruiter to say, like, hey, look, you can be part of something here. You can be part of, and I'm a Gator fan, so I'll just use this as an example. You can be part of the Gator Nation. You can be part of our program. I know you really got along with these other coaches at other programs, but if you come here, we're going to build around you. We're going to make you a star. We're going to make you feel valued. Now, granted, nationality is a little bit different. You know, it's a little bit of a deeper tie, but it's the same basic premise. Like, to act like the U.S. is somehow above recruiting players, and this is kind of something I've seen, which I'll get into, but like this idea that, like, oh, well, if you excuse me, if you feel American, you know, then you should play for us. That's not how it works. You know, you can have ties to different countries. And, you know, I think Hercules Gomez actually said that. He said, it was Hugo Perez. And Hugo Perez has been involved with the U.S. national team setup for a long time. And he said, you know, that he wasn't born here, but he was young. He played in the national team. And, you know, each culture is different. So you can't say that you're going to do it just one different, you know, one specific way. Like, each player needs to be kind of treated as their own individual. And Hercules Gomez said, you know, people don't understand what it's like to be a dual national, what it is to be a Mexican American. And then he said, you know, like, for Hercules Gomez, he said, my wife is Mexican. My daughter was born in the States. My parents were Mexican immigrants. I was born in the States. I have love for both countries. So it's not just saying, like, oh, well, I feel American, so I'm going to play for America. You can have legitimate ties to both countries. So this idea that people are throwing out, well, like, and it's predominantly coming from the usual suspects in the U.S. soccer media, like, oh, well, he didn't feel American, so it's better we don't have players like that. That's not how it works. That is not how it works. You have ties to different countries, so you have to make players feel valued. And U.S. soccer didn't do that. And, you know, the Mexican Federation did. And, you know, I forget who it was, but someone said, you know, we lost Jonathan by our own arrogance, or like our own kind of incompetence. Like, basically, we were neglecting the Hispanic community. Like, it's emblematic of a larger problem, like you mentioned.
I want to say that was either Winalda or Martino, I believe. I think it was Kyle Martino, because he did, in it to his credit, come out pretty strong against the U.S. Federation about this.
Because I think, I mean, people, you said, like, it's sort of like not making the World Cup, and you kind of tempered it by saying, well, maybe it's not that severe. I would argue it almost is, because it's simple. It's kind of symbolic of a deeper issue where you're neglecting a community, and these are all players who could be major assets to you. And if you haven't read it, I would encourage you to read this article by Kevin McCauley. I retweeted it earlier today, and it's called "The Old Boys Club: How U.S. Soccer Ignores Talented Players from Underserved Communities." And they talked to Hercules Gomez. They talked to Hugo Perez, about specifically the Hispanic communities, and like how these individuals have ties to multiple countries, and we're not doing enough to target these players. And they bring up the what is the academy? It's called Sueño Alianza. So that is I don't know if it's an event. It's an organization that runs free pay to play soccer camps, mostly aimed at Hispanic youth. So that's where Jonathan Gonzalez was actually discovered, you know, in terms of Monterrey signing him. And basically they're saying that, you know, the U.S. doesn't really do enough to get out to these events. Like, the Mexican club scouts and their federation pay to go to these events week in, week out, and U.S. soccer is not doing that. So you're missing out on all these different players, because I don't know why, and I don't know why MLS clubs aren't getting out there. And, I can't speak to the reason that is, but I know I'm getting ranty, so I'm gonna let you jump on this for a little while, because it frustrates me when such a significant potential part of your player pool is being neglected to this.
Well, look, I mean, there's a lot of different things that go into it. First of all, the fact that our media, which if our talking head media is saying it, our Federation believes it because they say what the Federation wants them to say. So the fact that as a Federation, we can sit here and look at the product we put out on the pitch, look at where we are compared to the rest of the world and say, you know what? We're fine. We're good enough doing what we're doing. We don't need these other players. We'll be fine with the players that want to come and play for us. In what world are we at that level? That's the first problem. The second problem, the Federation comes out. Oh, there's no, you know, players don't slip through the cracks in the U.S. We get everybody. You just lost one of your predominant youth players who was in your system for years. He just slipped through the crack to your biggest rival. And you're going to sit here and tell me you're not missing out on kids that are playing, and that youth players aren't slipping through the cracks? Youth players you've never seen before or never found before? Like, it's absolutely astounding just how incompetent every person in charge of U.S. soccer is right now. You know, and that's really where it comes down to. And it's, you know, that's why we missed the World Cup. I mean, look at the players that we kept calling in over and over and over again. And just kind of out of curiosity, I went back and I listened to a little bit of a podcast that I did a little over a year ago when I had a conversation with John Townsend, who we actually saw was just interviewing Eric Winalda not to, you know, last week or something. And I kind of listened to little bits and pieces of the conversation that we had. And we talked about it was right after Klinsmann got fired and Bruce Arena got hired. And, you know, honestly, we were both very, very wrong because we assumed the U.S. would qualify. We were like, it won't be a problem. They'll qualify no matter what. So, you know, old takes exposed on Twitter here. There you go. You know, but some of the things that were kind of brought up in that conversation about how, you know, some of the things that Klinsmann wanted to do with our team as far as transitioning to a different type of player. And that generation of players that he needed to really step up to take the team to the next level. The Michael Bradley, Jozy Altidore, like that age bracket of player that has gone absolutely MIA since coming back to play in MLS. And there's absolutely no denying that was the case. And something that we talked about in that podcast, that when's the last time Michael Bradley did anything good? It was when he was still at Roma. The last time he was anything, you know, Jozy Altidore, the last time he was good for the national team is when he was still playing in, where was he, in the Netherlands?
Yep. AZ Alkmaar. Yeah.
Thank you. So, you know, it's a problem that, and I'm not going to say that's why Klinsmann failed. Klinsmann had his issues. But the fact, you know, the point of bringing all that up is look at it ties into our player pool. Those players were an issue for Klinsmann. For the, you know, they were one of the reasons why we were in the position we were in to begin with, that we had to fire Klinsmann and bring in Bruce Arena. And then those same players didn't perform when all we needed to do was beat Trinidad and Tobago, get a point. Those players didn't show up. And it begs the question of, you know, it kind of ties into the whole thing about how do we think that we're too good for these dual national players that we're missing? How do we think we're too good to not dump all kinds of resources into scouts? We have one singular full-time scout that works for the U.S. Soccer Federation in this country. I want to make sure everybody heard that correctly. One. Not 100, not 1,000, one singular individual. And the Federation talks about, one of the difficulties, they don't say problems, they say difficulties, is that this country is so big. But that being said, nobody slips through the cracks. One of the things that having lots and lots of scouts do, it ties into what you said about staying in contact with that player. Make what is one thing that everybody in this world wants? They want to feel wanted, right? If you're trying to make a decision, let's just say it's an everyday life. You're looking at jobs. You've got job offers from two different companies, and you say, you know, one company, when you went for your interview, the CEO came and met you at the front door, shook your hand. The CEO took you around the building. The CEO got you a cup of coffee. Didn't make you wait. And the other one, you go in, you sit there, you know, you talk to a mid-level manager and he shows you around, doesn't get you coffee, doesn't offer you, you know, food or anything like that. Doesn't talk about you as a person, just talks about the company and the job. It can be the exact same job, the exact same pay. Where are you going to go? You're going to go to the place that made you feel wanted. It's the same with everything. So there's one thing, even if they're shitty scouts, even if they're the world's worst scouts, if you have somebody that says, hey, I want you to go to this tournament, wear your red, white, and blue USA Soccer Federation stuff, and go and talk to that number 16 on that team after the game. That's it. That's it. If you have somebody where that kid is, every time he steps off the field in the tournament, is being approached by a U.S. soccer scout, he's a dual national. Let's say he can go play for Germany and he can play for us, but he's growing up here. And every time he comes off the field, he's got a U.S. scout saying, hey, you played really well today. I like what you did there. How you doing? You know, if you ever have any questions, ever have any comment, anything, this is my card. Give me a call. You know how far that's going to go?
And that's the funny thing. Like, after this decision was made, like, some of the MLS writers were like, oh, so he changed his mind because Mexico gave him a little attention and we didn't invite him to one friendly that he wouldn't have played in.
It's so much more than that.
Like, Mexico had been in contact with him. The coach, the actual national team coach, was reaching out to him. And yes, I know Dave Sarachan is not the full-time coach. He's an interim coach. Doesn't matter. Give the guy a call. Just say, like, hey, you can't make it. I understand, but we still really want you. You're going to be a big part of what we do here. And your point about, like, slipping through the cracks, like, with Gonzalez, he didn't even really slip through the cracks. Like, this is someone we did find, and we just neglected. So imagine the players we're not finding. If we're neglecting players we do find, imagine the players we're not finding. Then there's no chance to get those players. And in a country of 350 million or whatever we are, if you honest to God think that no players are slipping through the cracks because, like you said, the lack of full-time scouts, the lack of organization, then you're fooling yourself. If you really think that we have all the mechanisms in place to make sure that this doesn't happen, then you just haven't been paying attention, or you've intentionally buried your head in the sand. And especially with the underserved communities, you know, the areas where they don't necessarily have access to top coaches. Like, if you think that those players are getting a fair shake in this system, I'll say it this way. It's very easy for people who have benefited from the system to say the system is working. That's how I will say that.
You know, and that's so true. It really is. I mean, you said something about there about serving, about the underserved communities. I forget who it was. It really bugged me that I don't remember who it was. But recently, somebody involved with either the Federation or a presidential election came out and said, there's not a problem with kids, you know, there's just not a problem with people playing soccer. There's plenty of people playing pickup everywhere. I went to a school with, if you count undergrads and grad students, 40,000 students. Top 10 in the country as far as international enrollment. Do you know how hard it was to find a pickup game? And we had a facility that we could just go play. We could go play pickup whenever we wanted. Now, what's the one sport you see kids play all the time everywhere, no matter where you are?
Basketball.
Play basketball. Because why? There's a hoop. There's a court set up in the city. How much money would it cost for the Federation to say, you know what? Hey, this community here, it's an underserved, it's a poor community. We're not getting rid of our pay to play, but you know what? Potential in this area, really, really good players that we're never, ever going to see. Never going to have the money to even take them to a tryout for a development academy. How much would it cost the Federation to go into communities like that and set up a little basketball court size field? Grass. Just like a hard surface with some metal nets.
To kind of tie into what you said, Sunil Gulati today at the convention in Philadelphia said that U.S. soccer has a surplus of like $150 million. What on earth is that money doing if it's not being reinvested at the grassroots level? Like, yes, people are going to say, oh, it's very easy to tell people how to spend their money. U.S. Soccer Federation, I believe, is a not-for-profit organization. So what are they doing with the surplus? Their very purpose is to ensure the state of the game in the U.S. is as good as it can be. And if you're telling me that this is as good as it can be, then we're all wasting time. There's no point following this program if you think this is as good as it can be. And, you know, I've seen people say, like, oh, my God, there's no need to blow up the system. It just needs to be tweaked. I don't think anyone is saying blow up the system, but smarter people than us are saying, like, these are code. All right, smarter people than you are saying. and you and I have interacted with these people, like coaches, like youth coaches on Twitter. There's a bunch of them, really smart people who are experiencing this. Like, I've seen so many people say, look, I've coached this guy, but his parents can't afford to take him to this camp, or his parents can't afford to put him on this travel team. You know, there's just so many stories like that. So the Gonzalez thing, like, people are saying, oh, you just missed on one player, but it's okay because we've got Tyler Adams or we got Weston McKennie. That's not the point. Do you think that, and yes, I understand the size of the country, but with $150 million surplus, you telling me you can't hire full-time scouts in every region whose sole job it is to facilitate young kids playing the game and get out to these games? Like, I'm sorry, it should not be this difficult. And if you put that buffoon Thomas Rongen anywhere near anything that matters with U.S. soccer, that doesn't help either. This moron is the one who cost us Nevin Subotic. You know, he's made so many comments about how, oh, we don't need this player, we don't need that player. This is the same guy that said Messi lacks game intelligence. This is the kind of guy that you're putting in charge? I don't think so. Sorry. Not having it.
One thing that just made me think about when you're talking about the money that we had, and we're going to wrap this up really soon, we promise. The amount of money that, if you look at the U.S., and I believe it's Germany, I think I've got it right. I wish I had the stat in front of me, but I forgot about it until just now. The amount of scholarship money that the U.S. has put into youth players, into helping them go to the academies and all of that. In the U.S. over the last 8 years, I think it was, we spent like $30,000 or $300,000, something like that. Something which really, when you say, wait, what? That's it? And it gets even worse when you compare it to, I really believe it was Germany, and it's 10 times what we've put into it. And I wish I had the figures in front of me, because it was absolutely staggering.
And the thing is, you hear the numbers, you're mentioning those numbers, that investment pays itself off down the line when seven of these players become decent players down the line. You know, it pays for itself. Like, people are saying, oh, well, you can't just spend money to solve the problem. If you invest in grassroots development,
you can.
You, well, first of all, yes, you can throw money to solve the problem.
Yes, you can.
Secondly, if you invest in grassroots development and you actually make a concerted effort to do so, it's going to pay off. You might not see it a year down the line. You're going to see it 5-10 years down the line when these youth players are given the right guidance and make it to the top. And I want to say one thing, like, you and I have never claimed to be coaching experts or youth development experts, but this is coming from fans of the program who read and try to stay educated as to what's going on these days. You know, these are problems that are very easily identifiable. If people like us can see them, imagine people who are working, who are trying to work with the system, but are getting stifled at every turn. You know, meanwhile, you have, I'm not going to name this person because I name him a lot, but like, you have people saying, oh, well, there's really, you know, like you said, that people aren't falling through the cracks, or, you know, name these players who are falling through the cracks, or, you know, people like that. I mean,
how can you name them if they've fallen through the cracks?
Yeah. That's like saying, does a tree make noise if it falls in the woods and no one hears it? Well, no one was there, so how would you know?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, first of all, that's always been a stupid analogy to me, but it's the first one that came to mind. But it's frustrating to me because I grew up playing AYSO, and I would wager a lot of people listen to this probably did the same. You know, like, I was very fortunate to have parents who could afford to pay all those costs. But even then, like, they were both working full time. So when I made All-Stars, they couldn't take me to these All-Star games. I couldn't even play All-Stars. There's families with way more financial difficulty who can't afford to take, you know, to drive their kids to these different programs to pay for these programs. So you're seeing kids 8, 9, 10 years old. That's it. They're done at that age. You know what I mean? And you'll never know what those kids became.
And you know, you kind of talk about it, like, the position that we're coming from, and I think we're both coming from a little bit of experience too. I mean, I've talked about it before on here. Growing up, I played, I forget which affiliation the league was with, but it was a small county-wide travel league. And, you know, there were some good players in it, but the only other option, if you wanted to take it to a different level, was to go and play for a premier club. And that meant for me driving an hour twice a week for practice, and then games were 6, 7, 8 hours away every weekend. And that's fine. You know, that was something that I wanted to do, something my family wanted to do. And I was lucky enough that I was able to do it. And we played some, you know, in the league just below the top club league in the country. So it was a really competitive league. We got our asses handed to us all the time. But you know what the difference was about that club? And the reason I played for that club is that even if I could have afforded to play for the Buffalo United, or if I wanted to drive out to Rochester and play for Rochester Football Club, could I have played for these? Was I better than some of the players on those teams? Yeah, I was. But in order to get into that club, you have to know all of these people, and it was 3 times as expensive as it was, you know, for the club that I played for. And was my club as good as them? No, it wasn't. We lost when we played them. They would beat us every time. But you know what? Did I get the same kind of experience for less? Absolutely. My point in saying that is you can find ways to help this out, to fix this situation. And the position that I'm coming from is I've seen it both as a player and I've seen it as a coach. You know, I coach kids from the town that I grew up in, and that is sure as hell a struggling town. It's an underserved area. And you know what? I've seen kids that had a whole hell of a lot of potential completely fall through the cracks because, you know what, they couldn't afford to play anything other than the travel league, which was a glorified rec league. You know, I've seen it firsthand, and that's with players that who knows what they could have done, but they just never had a chance.
And that's such a good point you bring up. And I'm just going to wrap up my thoughts with this, that tying it to the other U.S. sports, you mentioned basketball. There's a, you know, there's pickup courts all over the place. But, you know, you look at college basketball and college basketball recruiting. Coaches find these players in underserved communities. Like, I'm not going to name cities because I think, you know, that I don't want to offend anyone. But just like there are areas that are just not quite as affluent, where kids are still playing quality basketball and they're found, you know, because these AAU teams find them, or they get out to these, you know, these camps oftentimes pay these kids costs so that they can go, or their schools will pay, or, you know, there's different ways to do it. I'm not privy to the details, but players who can't necessarily afford these things on their own are assisted in getting their name out there, getting their highlight tape out there. And then college assistant coaches are constantly making the rounds at tournaments, checking out players and visiting families, you know, these in-home visits, same with college football, you know. And I live in Florida, so, you know, I can kind of speak to this just having seen it. Well, I mean, or having read about it and kind of seen it from my own knowledge of the sport, that college football programs have a board of thousands of players across the country. That means that they have eyes on all these different players in the schools. You know, they'll communicate with their coaches, they'll communicate with principals, with guidance counselors. Like, they are always on the lookout for these types of players. And then they have a board, and then when they focus in on their target, they'll be like, hey, we want this wide receiver. You know, like, he goes to this school that maybe not a ton of D1 players come from, but you know what, he's special. We're going to go make an effort and make sure that we get eyes on him so that he knows we value him. It's not too different here. It really isn't. You can put scouts in these different areas who just, all they have to do is go to games, videotape these kids, you know, talk to them, like you said, have a conversation, send it back to a national processing center. And then from there, guys are like, hey, this guy, you know, this kid can't really afford to play for an MLS academy. Let's see what we can do to help him out, or let's facilitate his transition to an academy, or let's see if we can get him a shot with one of our connections abroad. If you're going to commit to being an elite soccer program, you have to be willing to commit the resources to it. And, you know, I know I was kind of all over the place with that, but just the basic premise is that in other sports, they find ways to get these players that don't necessarily come from the most affluent backgrounds. They still find ways to give these guys opportunities. And that's what frustrates me. Now, maybe Jonathan was more a case that we weren't in communication with him, but there's so many more players probably as good as Jonathan, or with the potential to be as good as Jonathan, that we'll never know about.
Yeah, and I don't think that you really could say it much better. I mean, I think we, you know, we could go on this topic for probably 2 hours on its own. And it's something that we'll continue to touch on. And hopefully with the election coming up, we've got to be within about a month or so now. I don't know if it's the beginning of February, middle, or end, whatever, but it's sometime in February, so it's coming up really close. You know, it's a really, really crucial time for U.S. soccer. It's going to be – this election is going to show us how serious the people around U.S. soccer want to be taken as a soccer nation. If Kathy Carter gets elected, we know that as a soccer nation, we're never going to be anything other than what we are now, not for the foreseeable future. And if somebody else does – you know what? Maybe the people inside the game really want to see some change. So we can only hope for the best. And I think that everything you said at the end there about finding ways to make these to make it work for these kids that can't afford it. And you know, like I said before too, is stay in contact. Always be on the top of somebody's mind. Be right there. What is, like I said, Gonzalez steps off a field, guy with a U.S. crest on a shirt. Hey, played a hell of a game. Just want to let you know that we still are keeping you in mind. That's all it takes. That simple. And by putting people out there that their sole job is to do that, it's going to be incredible, the difference that you would see in it. And that's just it's as simple as that. Make that change as a change from the ground floor and just watch it start to grow. Because you know what? Once you're identifying these players, once you're finding the 13-year-old kid that's debating whether or not he wants to stay in soccer or go and play basketball or go and play football. I mean, you get kids that are great middle school soccer players, super talented, and then they say, you know what? Do I want to go play soccer or do I want to go play football? But I'll tell you what, if you've got this kid who's a spectacular soccer player and is thinking about playing football, but you identify him at 13 years old, so the summer before he goes into high school, you're a U.S. soccer scout. He steps off the field from one of his summer games, one of his travel games, and you say, hey, I'm so-and-so from U.S. soccer. Just want to let you know that we like what you're doing. We want you to keep it up. I will guarantee you that kid will not play football. He will stick with soccer. So you know what? Start making that effort earlier on with these kids. And that's going to take care of so many problems that we've got in this country as far as soccer nation. So unless you have anything else on the subject.
Summed it up completely. Sorry, I'm losing my voice also, but you summed it up really well there. I mean, these aren't, it's not reinventing the wheel here. You know, these are quick fixes to at least facilitate some changes. Now, obviously there's other changes that can be made further down the process, but even just at the beginning, in terms of not limiting yourself and your own player pool, I think you nailed it. And these are conversations that we need to be having, but more importantly, we need to put people in charge who are capable of implementing the changes that stem from these discussions. So even if it's not Eric Winalda, you know, if it's Steve Weinegrad or, you know, Paul Caligiuri, you know, guys like that who seem to have demonstrated that, you know, let's hope that they're the ones who get put in charge and maybe we'll see something. But no, certainly on my end, you know, we could go on about this for hours, but don't want to bore the people at home.
So, yeah. And I know we kind of ran a little bit longer than I think we meant to, but the U.S. soccer discussion really kind of hits at something deeper. And I think that's why we get a little carried away on those conversations. So, I don't apologize for going long, because I think it was a good discussion.
I was going to say, I think a lot of people can relate to this discussion, though, because right. Everyone is growing up around people like, man, if that kid got a shot, he could have been something.
Exactly. And that's one of the things. So you talk about it. Hey, maybe it'll change. We're doing what we can to kind of affect some change. So, Alex, would you give him the rundown of where everybody can find us if you don't already know where that is?
Yeah, of course. You know, we are starting to get more active on the Facebook page, you know, posting the live streams there. Please like us there, share us, do whatever you got to do. It's facebook.com/EuroSnobPod. You can also find us on Twitter at twitter.com/EuroSnobPod. You can find me at UFGoonerAJ on Twitter. You can find Ian at GunnersFan6. You know, subscribe on iTunes, Eurosnob Podcast, or, you know, listen to us on the Podomatic site, which you can always find the link on our Twitter. So, you know, just please, you know, check us out. If you like what we're doing, you know, please let people know and we can continue to have these really good discussions and, hopefully, you know, open people's eyes to some issues maybe they didn't know about. And certainly if you guys have input, neither of us claim to be experts. We're always hoping to, you know, to obtain further perspective and knowledge. So we'd love to have people on who can provide that. So with that said, Ian, any final words?
Yeah, I mean, other than, you know, let's keep this conversation going. I know we said it before. Somebody needs to be having the conversation. And I know that the people that matter probably aren't listening into our little podcast here, but you know what? The more we talk about it, the more other people talk about it, the further an effect that we could potentially actually have. So That being said, we love to get your feedback on everything that we're doing. We love your comments, good or bad. So from both of us here, I just want to sign off and we'll talk to you guys soon.